Good evening, everybody. Monday night, 9 o'clock, Shad Etzion. We announce 8:45. I appreciate those of you who get here by 9. It's officially an 8:45 class, but it's pretty good for a Syrian class. That's pretty good, 9 o'clock. Tonight's class is dedicated anonymously for the Refuah Shelema, Afacham Baruch Ben Chaim Shelita. Baruch Hashem is doing very well. We hope that it only improves. Hanukkah is tonight's subject. And I might tell you some things you don't want to hear. But, you know, it's the holiday of light. You have to open your eyes. And I've been pretty moderate the last few weeks. I find that the other speakers, if they don't get outrageous once in a while, nobody listens, so why should I be the nice guy? Generally, when I discuss the Jewish holy days of the year, I like to take a pragmatic approach. I like to discuss, besides the symbolism, the philosophies and everything behind it, the observances, what are the laws, what are we supposed to do, I like to very often talk about what are we supposed to accomplish. Like Sukkot, we're supposed to develop happiness and take that simcha the whole year through. Pesach, we're supposed to free ourselves from the shackles that bind our personalities. So tonight, maybe I'll tell you, I guess I'll get to it eventually. What Hanukkah is supposed to be. There's many, many, many different messages, and I like to zero in on one or two. But there's a little article, it's funny, I picked up a Jewish Observer magazine, and I don't know, around my house, things are not too organized. If I'm looking for a paper I wrote 3 years ago, it could be on the top of the desk, or it could be lost forever. This is last year's November issue. And there was something bothering me, and sure enough, you know, Hashkacha Pratit, you like those stories? I opened up this issue because it had Rabbi Miller's Alava Shalom's picture on the cover, and it had the World Trade Center on the cover falling down. You see all that stuff? This is like last November. This was that was what was on our minds. And it had a one-page article. So I will credit to Mrs. Kurtz, a Beis Yaakov teacher. And it expresses something that Hanukkah is not. And it's one of my pet peeves. And you know, my pet peeves don't go away. I just keep talking about them year in, year out. Nobody listens to me, but at least I get it off my chest once a year. I will give you the title, and from there you'll know my pet peeve. We wish you a Merry Hanukkah. Doesn't that sound goyish? We wish you a Merry. You see, this season is a season of lists. People make lists. Who do I have to get a present for? Which teacher? Which friend? Which relative do I have to get presents for? So we start shopping for Hanukkah. Now, it happens to be this very same wonderful magazine that represents a lot of pure Jewish thought. I happened to finish reading it, so I said, you know, it's nice to thumb through old magazines once in a while, and they had a 20% off Art Scroll sale, which is, of course, happens every year this time. I guess it'll be happening another couple of weeks. And then the cheese company tells you to have a very good Hanukkah, which is nice. I love their greetings. And then as I looked through, I came upon a page, Feldheim, which is one of the great, and I am not saying this sarcastically, Jewish publishers, especially in the English language, Feldheim, very esteemed, very, very respected Jewish publishing house. Feldheim's educational games make great Hanukkah gift ideas. That's exactly what I'm talking about. What is a Hanukkah gift? I'll tell you one thing. If you search through the halakha books for a source of gift giving on Hanukkah, you will not find it there. There is no such thing as a Hanukkah gift. The closest thing we can come to, if you want to be really, really broad-minded about the subject, is there's a thing called Hanukkah Geld. Hanukkah Geld is money given to children, and those who try to figure out where customs are derived and how things start say that it was always an encouragement to children to learn Torah. It's tell them, if you learn this Mishnah, I'll give you a quarter. If you get 100 on the test, I'll give you a dollar. Since one of the decrees on Hanukkah was to outlaw the study of Torah, and giving money to children is a way to encourage the study of Torah, there was a thing called Hanukkah Geld, which was money given to children to encourage their study of Torah. That's not gift giving. If you go to Borough Park, which is supposed to be a pretty Hasidic neighborhood, a lot of modern Orthodox Jews are afraid to go there. They may get infected by a little bit of overobservance, or maybe hashkafa problems. If you go to Williamsburg, if you go to these places that are supposed to be the bastions of Orthodox Jewry in this city of New York, you will find Hanukkah gift windows. The stores are advertising, buy this gift for Hanukkah. This Mrs. Kurtz wrote, these days, though, it's Borough Park that's decking the halls with Hanukkah presents and Hanukkah wrapping paper to wrap them in. Our yeshivot are sponsoring pre-Hanukkah mini malls where you can buy gifts for everyone on your list. That's our yeshivot. It's easy to understand the economic lure. After all, Hanukkah has become very, very good business. Just listen to the jingling of the cash registers. This is one of my pet peeves. That's why I love this article. I would read the whole thing, but time doesn't permit. But I want to get to the crux of our article rather than the criticism part, because the criticism part you could figure out for yourself. You're all out there in the real world and you know what I'm talking about, right? I mean, I don't have to go any further. I don't have to be sarcastic. It may make the tape funnier, more people listen to it, but that's not what I'm here to accomplish. We're overlooking a few things, though. First of all, we're shortcoming our Yom Tov and our traditions. Isn't there enough in the beauty of the menorah? The cooking of the latkes? The joy of playing for pennies, a good old-fashioned game of dreidel. Do we really have to replace the time-honored tradition of Hanukkah Geld with this year's latest craze to make our children happy? Now, I know one year, I'll show how old-fashioned. I remember when Game Boy was hot, but that's not hot anymore. There's something new, I guess, that replaced it. And Baruch Hashem, I haven't heard of it because they gave up already. My kids gave up. They're not getting it. We don't have Hanukkah gifts. We haven't had for years. In fact, my wife saw a little doll. And she said, I'm not supposed to say these things on tapes because she gets upset. But she said, I bought this doll. It was some kind of animal doll for her grandson. But I'm giving it to now because it's not really a Hanukkah gift. She knows she's not allowed, you know, because it was a Hanukkah gift. The doll goes back to the store. And we don't want to do that. We don't like refunds. We like credit card bills. So maybe we can use the time we save in not shopping and not wrapping presents to make jelly donuts from scratch. Now, there's an irony here that this Mrs. Kurtz, this Beis Yaakov teacher brings up that's really, really the reason why I don't like it. There's a point to Hanukkah. There was a threat to Judaism in Hanukkah. In Purim, they wanted to destroy our bodies. Harog, Lashmid, Labed. There's a whole list of words in the Megillah, what Haman wanted to do to us. But basically, it was very Hitler-y. It was a Holocaust. I want to kill them all. Arafat's cousins. I want to kill them. I don't want them here. I want to kill them. And therefore, when our bodies were saved, we have a holiday that's celebrated with mishte, eating and drinking. We celebrate the body that was saved. Hanukkah was not like that. It was a period of Hellenism. Hellenism means the Greeks who had conquered most of the known world, in all the countries that they conquered, tried to get the people that lived in those countries to adopt their philosophies and to become Hellenistic. Meaning, believe as I do, play as I do, dress as I do, have sports as I do, have Olympics, do everything. You know, Maccabee Games. These are the things that they wanted you to. And if you did that, if you Hellenized yourself, then you could live. They were living in Eretz Yisrael. There was a Beit HaMikdash. It's okay to have so long as it has idols in it. You have to be like me. It was an attempt to assimilate us, to get us to think like them, to act like they do, to hold their values and philosophies. And we won. We won. If we won, that means we should not hold of their philosophies. We should not think like them, be like them, or act like them. And we won. We had Mesirut Nefesh. We fought a war of a bunch of 13 Kollel guys. I figured it out today. It was approximately 11 million Greek soldiers. So 11 million to 13. Pretty good odds, huh? And they went and they fought, and they won. And after they won, they reestablished the Jewish kingdom in Eretz Yisrael, and therefore we had a situation of our right to be Jews and feel and think like we want to. So that's the victory of this great holy week, Hanukkah. That we can be Jews like Jews should be. And so what has developed in the Galut America? We want to be Jews like Goyim are. They have presents. I want presents. They wrap in little paper that symbolizes their gift. I want little paper with dreidels on it. They wear ties with little trees with lights on it. I know people wear ties with dreidels on them. We want to be just like them. We don't want to lack anything. We wish you a Merry Hanukkah. The irony is, it's the opposite of what the holiday represents. So, go return those gifts you've bought, and don't buy any more. And if you like somebody, give them a gift any other day of the year except Hanukkah. Don't spoil my holiday with goyish ideas. I said my piece early. For those of you bored in the car, you can now turn off this tape. You like that idea. Excuse me. You're looking at another one. I don't believe it. Okay. All right. Tanu Rabbanan. Our sages said, Mitzvat Hanukkah ner ishu beto. What's the mitzvah of Hanukkah? A candle, a light for a man and his family, his household. Lighting the lights, a ner, a candle. Now, a candle generally in our holy religion represents a search. For example, when we search for chametz, until recently, when a few people burned down their houses, so we started using flashlights, which is legal and good. We'll get to that Pesach time. People searched with a candle. On Chanukah, we light up the house with a ner, a candle. And there must be some connection between the concept of searching and Chanukah. That's a big bag this week. Wow. Last week she didn't bring any bag. That's a big one. I hope there's no Chanukah presents in there. What are we searching for? I'm going to give you a surprising answer. It's an answer provided by a great rabbi who was Moser Nefesh for Am Yisrael and was taken in half his life in a car accident just about 2 years ago, Pesach time. Rav Shimshon Pinkas Zecher Tzadik Livracha. He says, you know what we're looking for? Or said, Allah B'Shalom, we're looking for Choshech. We're searching for darkness. Now that should surprise you. So the next 35 or 40 minutes will be spent explaining that in practical terms. If you have a person who was born lo aleinu blind, no ability to see, that person really doesn't realize that they're living in darkness. The person doesn't know what colors they're missing. They don't know what a beautiful view of the Grand Canyon is. They can't look in awe at Niagara Falls. They have no idea what these things look like. If that person was suddenly gifted with the gift of sight, then they would finally realize what they had been missing all their life up to that moment when they were able to see. We are living, or we think we're living, in a world of light. And Hashem told us through His sages, every year at this time of year, light a candle. And when that candle lights, and you look at it, and you say, Hanerot Halalu, realize that you've been living in the dark. Now let's figure out what all that means. To Chazal, there's two things called darkness. You know, they have all their symbolism and all their representations, and there's two things that our rabbis call darkness. The first darkness, Tashet Choshech V'Hilayla, night, dark, is this world. Olam Hazeh. Olam Hazeh is a place of Olam. Olam means hidden. Ne'elam means somebody disappeared. The root of the word Olam means hidden, missing, covered up, gone. And when we live in this world, if we realize that it's all illusion, if we realize that it's really a block between us and our Maker, and that in downtown Brooklyn language, and all the gas is there to keep us away from our tachlit, from our real purpose, we'll understand what Chazal mean when they say, this is a world of darkness. Tashet Choshech V'Hilayla, it says in Barachi Nafshi, the famous Rosh Chodesh Mizmor of Tehillim, says the Gemara, Ze Olam HaZeh Shedomeh Lelayla. That's this world which is similar to night. There's something else that's considered night by Chazal. That something else is Yavan. Yavan is Greece. We have four galuyot that we know we're supposed to suffer. We are currently in the Galut that's called Galut Edom, the Esav Galut. It's combined with or tailed, the tail of it is Yishmael, which I've discussed before, how to look at them. But the previous Galut was called Galut Yavan, Greek. And the amazing Midrash in the beginning of the entire Torah says, V'choshech al penei tehom, that famous early Pasuk, first three Pasukim of Torah. Choshech, that's Yavan, that's Greece. Why? Shehechshicha, that kingdom of Greece, darkened the eyes of Israel with their decrees. And although when the other galuyot, the other exiles ended, Bavel ended, they disappeared from the face of the earth. But when Greece ended, Persia ended also, disappeared. But when Greece ended and Rome took over, now it's subjected to them for the last 1,934 years since the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed. We're in that galut of Rome. In spite of the fact that they took over and replaced Yavan, Yavan, Greece, still exists in the world today. It didn't disappear like the Babylonians and the Persians of old. And that has a lot to do with our status today. You see, Greece in history has a very special place. Greece is the country that the Taliban hates. Because Greece is the civilization that established the foundations for what's called, it's a dirty word on the other side of the ocean, but some of us respect it, it's called Western civilization. Have you heard that stuff? That's what Osama doesn't like. Western civilization. Philosophy. Sports. What we call technology and scientific development. All began in the Enlightened Age of Greece. Many of the art forms and the advancements in sculpture and painting, Greece. Greece stands out as a place where architecture developed to new levels. It was a very advanced society for its time, and it was the basis for Western civilization. Science also developed during the Greek period. So you would think that our sages, when they look at Greece, would call Greece or light. They lit up the world with knowledge and science and astronomy and architecture and art, advancement. And yet, you open up the Midrash, Choshech, Ze Yavan. Darkness, that's Greece. And our obligation, as I said before, on Hanukkah is to spot the darkness, to search and identify the darkness. Now this sounds very deep, it's not. It's really very pashut. Nothing is as dark as light. Now you're all awake, right? All you note-takers stopped writing. All of a sudden they were writing and they all looked up at the same time. What did he say? I said darkness. Nothing is as dark as light. You can write it now. You got it right the first time. They all started crossing out and erasing it. They figured I said it backwards, so they're going to cross it out. You see, take a boy or a girl from a religious family. Let them grow up in a world of Torah. And then put them in the university atmosphere. Now I know that I went to college. I survived. I don't know how. I guess because I didn't like the teachers, so I didn't listen. If I listened, I'd probably be in trouble. But you know, as people say, you don't get college, you can't have a profession, you can't be, you can't, I'm not going to get into that debate. That's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is the degree of emunah a person has as an enlightened person and the degree of emunah a person has as a simple person. Now, of course, there are exceptions on both ends. And I will open this discussion with that because otherwise I'll get in a lot of trouble and say, ah, Raymond Bader is off the wall. But I'm not off the wall. I'm talking sense. Let me explain it to you. If I were to tell you the president of Harvard University was an Orthodox Jew with a shtreimel, a long beard and tzitzit hanging out, you'd look at me and say, yeah, tell me another one. Because even if a person entered Harvard looking that way, you know that 4 years later when they came out, they ain't going to look like that no more, no more, no more. Right? There's a song when I was young. I ain't going to be like that no more, no more. I guess, otherwise it wouldn't come out like that. I'm so old, I was before rock and roll. You see, and you would think it should be the opposite. Because mada, the word for science, mada, comes from the word da'at, knowledge. It's the same root. And you would think if a person studied this creation and looked into the details of plants and animals, and there's going to be a meteor shower tomorrow morning. I don't know what it's going to look like, but a lot of people are going to be up at 5 o'clock that are not normally up at 5 to see it. We got a clear night, Baruch Hashem. We're going to look up. We hope we see it. And it's going to be a fantastic show of Hashem science. That's 1 second. It's nothing. It's nothing. Sunrise is just as beautiful. Sunset is just, it's once in a while, so we'll get up early once in our lives. Happens to be late for me, I'll be up anyhow. But I'm going to look. And you would think when I look, if I'm shocked, and then I study it, and there's enough blurbs and newspaper articles and things about it, and I start to see what a meteor shower is, and how it happens, and how it's controlled, and why it destroys, and how come it doesn't hit us, and how come it missed. And then I get into, look at the sun, it's exactly 93 million, you know, all that shara bechina stuff. That you would think, studying mada, going to university, you would go in looking like a hippie and come out looking like the other guy. Because the more you studied it, the more emunah you should end up with. The more religious you should become. The more in awe of God and His creation and the precision of creation you should get, right? But somehow it doesn't work that way. Now you see what I'm talking about? I'm not talking pro-college, anti-college. I'm talking the facts of the way it works. It should, in effect, make you a religious fanatic. So much faith in Hashem you should have from studying these things. And yet we find, as a rule, a general rule, not every single person, but the majority of people go the other way. When they become enlightened, they go into the dark. So now you can write down, nothing is as dark as light. And I'll tell you why. You see, science is an amazing thing. They have instruments with which they measure things. They have microscopes, electron microscopes, atomic microscopes. They have all kinds of microscopes that can see, so to speak, like teachers do, see. They could see things that the eye can't see, down to atoms and neutrons and whatever parts of those things they've finally got up to. You know, when I was in college, only three things you had to know. Electrons, neutrons, and protons. All the ons. That's, now they got 90 million other ons that they thought of. Because the microscopes got better. And then there's telescopes. Telescopes can bring something distant far, something small make it big. You can look. And they use those tools to measure things, to investigate things, and to reach conclusions, scientific theories. Right? You heard of this stuff, right? Anything I'm telling you, you never heard of before? You heard of this stuff, right? My answer is, right? You heard of this stuff, good. So science uses its own specific tools to reach its conclusions. Now let's say there's a man, and he has a theory that there's a fish. There's a fish that exists. A real live fish, complete creation called a fish, and he has a special name for it. He's going to name it after himself. His name is Henry. He's going to call it the Henry fish. And this Henry fish is less than a millimeter large. Can you imagine a whole live being, a millimeter? So what is he going to do now? He's going to go out to prove his theory. He's got to go out and catch one. So he starts by making the smallest net he could make. You know, the most microscopic net he could make. And he's going to go around to all the seas and oceans he could visit with Jacques Cousteau. Is he still alive? He probably died already. All right? Jacques Cousteau, did he drown or he died regular? He's always played with the sharks and things. I wonder how he did that stuff. All right, so he goes around with Jacques Cousteau all over this planet looking for this fish that's a millimeter or less. And he doesn't find it. Then some guy comes along and tells him, I don't know why you're spending millions and millions of dollars of foundation money on your scientific experiment. You see, you can't make a net where the holes in the net are small enough to catch this sub-millimeter fish that you're looking for. You see, you don't have the right net, and you can't make one. So you know what the guy decides? Since he can't find this fish anymore, since he doesn't have the tools to find this fish anymore, he'll stop searching for this fish anymore, and he'll come to the conclusion, so there must not be one. He doesn't have the tools to find it, so there must not be one. Is this stuff too deep for you guys? You're all awake tonight or what? Thank you. Okay, a couple of nods. I look like bobblehead dogs tonight, you know. Like all your necks are loose, you know. Come on. Get back. You know. Last thing, everybody's awake. You're all, you know, excited and everything. I was afraid to give this class. First we started no Hanukkah gifts. Now it's getting worse. Well, I got news for you folks. Just like there's no scientific instrument to find that fish, there's no scientific instrument that can prove there's a Hashem. There's no scientific instrument that can discover, measure, prove that there's a God. And to a lot of people, if I can't prove it, I don't want to say it. It's not nice. But if I can't prove it, that means that's the darkness of Yavan. That's the darkness of Western civilization. You know how silly they are? How many... Somebody must know that. I have an intelligent crowd here. How many billion people are on this earth? 6? 4? Huh? 7? Anybody? I don't know. Anybody know the answer? I mean, I don't know. I don't play Jeopardy. Anybody know the answer? 9? Okay, we had 6, 9, 7. All right. There's almost 10 million and 10 billion people on this earth. How many people in a billion? 1,000 million. Right? 1,000 million is a billion. Does anybody know that? 1,000 million is a billion. Bill Gates knows that. He counts his money. He knows how much he has. 1,000 million is a billion. So when you read that somebody has $4 billion, He has $4,000 million. Now, we came up here with a modest estimate of 6 to 7 billion people on this earth. Do you know, if you studied any one of those 7 billion people, you have the best instrument for proving there's a God? That human being, that creation of his, what a proof. But scientists study that human, tell you how much water, how many miles of intestine, how many nerves, how many, they tell you every chemical, they tell you how DNA works, but they tell you there's no God. I don't get it. Do you? But you should. That's light. They're so light, they're living in the dark. They're so smart. As my mother, Aleha Shalom, used to tell me, you're too smart for your own good. And she knew what she was talking about. If they would only ask themselves, where did this creation called a human being come from? That's the greatest scientific tool for proving Emunah is correct. There's a God. He created us. You can't do it, honey. They've been trying it. They have experiments and foundations that'll pay for someone who can create a perpetual motion machine. And because Hashem created a thing called friction and gravity and other resistive forces, you can't create one. But you certainly can't create a human being. And Hashem now has in his possession, based on the modest estimates of this intelligent crowd, between 6 to 9 billion of them, proving Emunah and proving that if you're too smart for your own good, there's nothing as dark as light. We talked about that blind person about 20 minutes ago. The greatest choshech are your eyes. The greatest darkness is your eyes. And that's because people say seeing is believing. But the biggest liars you know are your eyes. They lie to you all the time. There was once a young man whose brother told his father, I'm going to the Beit Midrash to study. So the boy went, he said, go get your brother, bring him home, I want to talk to him. I have something I want him to do. So he went to the shul, he looked around, it wasn't a big crowd, a few people here, a few people there. He said, it's not here. He goes home, tells Daddy, Daddy, he wasn't there. He said, did you look under the tables? He says, no. He says, how do you know he's not there? Well, I looked around, he wasn't there. He said, but did you look under the tables? He says, no. He said, well, go back and look under the tables. So he went back, he looked under the tables. He's a good boy. He listened to Daddy, he went back, he looked under the tables, didn't find him. So now he's not above the table, not below. He went back, his daddy's not there. From that day on, that poor young man started to believe that if he don't see it, it ain't there. If I don't see it with my eyes, it doesn't exist. You believe that? You believe that? You don't believe it? I tell you, if I don't see some, and I say, seeing is believing. Show me I'm from Missouri. You want me to give a whole list of things? If I don't see it, I don't believe it. If I see it in the New York Times, I don't believe it. But, you know, see it. Believe it. Right? Is that what people say? And there's a lot of people out there who got used to the fact, I looked for him. He's not there. He doesn't exist. Not there. Raise your hands now. I don't want anybody screaming out an answer. Has anybody here ever seen a sound wave? No? So I guess there are none. Are there? But you never saw one. Oh, you hear me? That doesn't prove it's a sound wave. Does it? It's very logical. She hears me, there must be a sound wave. Has anybody ever seen, I don't mean sparks, have you ever seen electric current? So I guess there's no electricity. You don't see it? You're looking back at me very sarcastically. What's going on here? What did I say? I don't get it. His brother wasn't in the shul. He's not there. I don't see sound waves. They don't exist. In fact, the eyes not only lie to me, all my five senses lie to me. You ever blow a dog whistle? Anybody ever blow a dog whistle? I saw one once. I tried to blow it. You go, you blow it all you might, you don't hear anything. And all of a sudden you see 24 dogs with their ears perked up. And they all come running and barking. You throw the whistle away, you think they're after you, and you run. But I didn't hear anything. That means there was no sound, right? So what did the dog hear? But I didn't hear it. So it must not exist. And please don't try the electric current test. We don't want you to prove that there is electric current by sticking your finger in the wrong place. So we put our trust in our five senses, and they're the biggest liars we know. What did I say? We're up a creek without a paddle. We need our senses to survive, and yet they're the biggest trickers and fools that we know. You know what the problem is, folks? It's hard to say. I don't know. I feel funny tonight, like everybody's going to think I'm crazy. When someone's in the dark and they don't know it, they don't ask anybody to turn on the lights. You're not in the dark, you're not going to ask for help. But a person who's in the dark and realize, hey, it's dark in here, hey, somebody turn on the lights. Right? What is this all? What am I talking about? Anybody got where I'm going here? Nah, I'm not in the dark. You're in the dark. It's now 45 minutes into this class. Another 5 or 6 minutes, maybe I'll turn the lights for you. A person in the dark doesn't realize that the lights are off, and therefore they don't seek help from anybody to hold their hand or to turn on the lights. That's Hanukkah. That's the practical thing we're supposed to do next week. Try and find the darkness so we know that we need help to turn on the light. We're getting there now. We want to see the darkness. We're taking out our candles to search for the darkness, Just like we search for the chametz with a candle, we're going to use these candles to search for the darkness in our lives. We're going to use our good common sense to figure out who created this world, who's running it, how is he working it, what's the truth. We're looking for emet, and we can't find it. My eyes lie to me, my ears lie to me, my sense of smell lies to me. I can't get a straight answer out of anybody or anything. I don't have, and I know you website people are going to like this one, I don't have a minute for myself. I'm so hooked on digital, electronic, PCS, ABC, DVD life of mine that I can't get unhooked long enough to see or hear the truth. I'm so over-mediated with Hannity and all those other maniacs talking to me all day long, telling me how to think, what to believe, that I end up buying Hanukkah gifts. I think the main part of Hanukkah is the gift. And it's the only part of Hanukkah that's not part of Hanukkah. Yes, somebody, what time is the right time to light? They don't know. Should I use oil or wax candles? Is there a difference? I don't know. If the man's on the road, should his wife light, his son light, who should light? I don't know. Is eating a meal on Hanukkah mitzvah like Purim or not? I don't know. Do you give gifts? Of course! Minhag chalab. Something, I don't know. We're in the dark. We're worried about Osama. We're worried about the latest SUV. We're worried about so many things that don't matter. We don't take time out to see. There was a great rabbi in the last generation, Rav Baruch Ber. Rav Baruch Ber walked into a room. He saw a newspaper on the table, and it wasn't the New York Times. It was a pretty kosher newspaper. He took his elbow and he knocked it off the table. Somebody looked and said, you know, if Rav Baruch Ber knocks a newspaper off the table, there must be a reason why you're not allowed to touch a newspaper. So he goes, he looks in Shulchan Aruch, he goes studying, he's looking all the laws. How? Where does it say you can't touch a newspaper? Guess what? You're allowed to touch a newspaper. Couldn't find it. But then he realized that in Rav Baruch Ber's mind, he had a different concept. I want to push the newspaper away from me. But why isn't the newspaper light? Information? What time the movie starts? Who is the president's new girlfriend? What happened in the world of sports yesterday? What's the latest scandal in the stock market? How is Bloomberg going to make a new enemy today? Who's he going to fire? Whose taxes is he going to raise? Isn't that what's important? The details. The facts, ma'am, just the facts. And the more I know, the more enlightened I am. So the newspaper is a source. The radio is a source. The Toeva box is a source of information that can enlighten me. So what is the rabbi pushing it off the table for? This thing can open worlds for me. Isn't that what we think? I have a favorite story. The rabbi called me today to tell me something totally different. A good friend of mine from Yerushalayim. You've heard it before. I'm going to tell it again. In fact, I told him I gave him a new name and he laughed. The Kaftorah Rebbe. This rabbi is not the Kaftorah Rebbe. I'll tell you why in a minute, why I named him that. And he laughed when I told him. He's a rabbi that has a great institution. He's a Rosh Yeshiva. When he comes to New York, I try and help him. I go to some offices with him. I used to do it a lot more. Now I do it a lot less. We both got a lot older. But in the early days, I'd pick him up from wherever he prayed that day. We'd get in the car and drive to the city. Run around a little bit. I go to my office a few hours. The end of the day, we meet a few people. At the end of the day, get back in the car and come back at night. And that would be the way we raise money for the yeshiva. So, I'm out shopping for a car. My lease is up. It's time for a new car. I bring home all the little brochures. You know, you can't find them anymore. Now you're supposed to go online or whatever to find it. But, you know, I bring home all the brochures, the old ad. I don't know, people still know they used to have. They still have those things. The book with the pictures of the interior, the exterior, the colors, and everything. You look in the back. Every color you want, they don't have. The stuff in the back. And now, so we sit down in the family. I'm going to bond with the family. That word wasn't invented yet. This is about 11 years ago. And I see a car that's a little more than I want to spend. But it knocks my socks off. The Mussar didn't get into me yet. I think it's important. But I'm struggling with the concept of this car. And my little son tells me, Daddy, get that car. Why? When you drive Rabbi to the city, he deserves that car. You're smarter than I thought, kid. I think I'll buy it. Now he comes about 4 days a year, but I bought the car for the whole 36-month lease. So now I get the car. The rabbi comes to town. I put him in the car. I drive to work in the morning. He doesn't look up from the photocopies to the checks from his list. We have to go here. We have to go there. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da. He falls asleep. He wakes up. I get to the city. I'm so disappointed. Another car I bought for him. He didn't notice it. But at night I got him. We get to the parking lot at 7:30 at night. It's dark. We get into the car. I turn on the lights. The whole dashboard lights up. I mean, there's more lights on this thing now. Every button has a light, and a green button, a red button, a yellow button, all kinds of different things flashing. He looks, he says, you got a new car? I tell him, yeah, since you're here, I got a new car. How do you like it? He says, beautiful car. What are all those lights? I says, every button does something. And being a Rosh Yeshiva, he's curious. What does this button do? This button turns on a CD. What's a CD? I said, well, in the trunk. That was the days of the trunk. Now it's in the dashboard. In the trunk, I have a little box. It has a little CDs in it. It has the music. And I pray. You want to hear Cheskel Sion? Boom, I press the button. Wow, Cheskel Sion singing in the car. What's this button? That's the temperature for my air conditioning. What's that button? That's your air conditioning. Wow, two air conditioning temperatures. Freaking out from every button in the car. So I show him all the cars, the fresh air button, to this button, to that button, to that, da, 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 da. He tells me, this is a beautiful car. And now I'm feeling that kid is smarter than I thought. The rabbi loves his car. I'm so glad I'm spending double what I can afford because the rabbi's happy. And my friends are impressed. Now we get to like the traffic by the battery tunnel. I'm going slow. The rabbi puts down, he had a little book he was reading, a Gemara or something. He starts to get tired. He puts it down in his lap. He starts to doze off. And all of a sudden he opens his eyes. He says, Raymond. I tell him, yes, rabbi. He tells me, you see all these buttons? I said, yeah. He says, they're beautiful. But every button in this car is another wall between you and Hashem. The word for button in Hebrew is kaftor. I told him, you are the Kaftorah Rebbe. You taught me something about the things of this world. Everything you get involved in this world is another button. And every button is another wall between you and Hashem. The more gas, the less God. There was once a lady, it's a true story. She couldn't read. So they hand her a newspaper, and she was a little embarrassed to show she couldn't read, so she takes the newspaper in her hand, and she's holding it upside down. And there's a picture of a cruise ship, you know, the Passover trip. The cruise ship, and it's upside down. And she screams. And I tell her, what's the matter? There's the poor people on the boat, they're all going to die. But that simple person, who we could laugh at for not being able to read a newspaper, that simple person has emunah. She makes halot on Friday and uses her fingers for mitzvot. She goes and comforts people with her words. She goes around thanking God all day long because her actions are mitzvot and her actions are deeds that come from emunah, not spoiled by what's in that newspaper. She doesn't know what a cellular phone is and how many free minutes you get on the weekend. She doesn't care. She's not involved in that. She's not enlightened enough to live in the dark. She's living in the light of Torah and Mitzvot. Rabbi Hillel Zaks, who just left Brooklyn a couple of days ago, Shalita, is a grandson of the Chafetz Chaim. And he tells about a cousin of his, a young woman, a granddaughter, the Chafetz Chaim, who went to Eretz Yisrael from Russia. And she left the house at 17 years old to go to university. And 2 years later, this enlightened granddaughter of the Chafetz Chaim came to visit one of the greatest people who ever lived on this earth of all time, and certainly one of the top 10 in the last century. And that's why throughout the Time magazine, when they had the, you remember they had the Millennium issue, and I opened up, they didn't have Rambam, they didn't have the Chafetz Chaim, they didn't have Maran Shulchan Aruch. What kind of list of greats is this? They had nobody in there. But this man is visited by his granddaughter. And she comes and tells him, Grandpa, before she said it in Yiddish, how long are you going to live with your head in the sand in the dark? When are you going to come out and see the light? The Chafetz Chaim looked at her and said, my dearest granddaughter, this was World War I time. She says, you see those planes that are dropping bombs all over Europe now? Someday they're going to fly to the moon. And someday they're going to make bombs that technologically be so powerful they could blow up the world. He said that in 1915. He says, but you know what we do? We don't make planes and we don't make bombs. We make people. We make human beings act like human beings. We work on midot. Isn't it shocking? A granddaughter of the Chafetz Chaim could leave such a home of light and go to the enlightenment and end up in the dark. Harambam says, it says Elokei Avraham. He says this in Morei Nevuchim. It says Elokei Avraham, the name of God is connected to Avraham because Avraham was connected to Hashem 24/7. So you ask yourself, he had to eat, he had to sleep, he had to work, he went to war, he did things besides pray and write his famous 400 tractates of Avodah Zarah. But you see, there's a way of living in this world connected to the source by lighting a candle. If you turn on the lights, you'll see how much darkness there is. The darkness of the media, the darkness of the education, the darkness of the Western civilization, the darkness of the Greeks, the darkness of sports and competition and excelling in all the wrong things and ignoring all the right things. You're a much greater person if you can win the contest against your own temper or your own ga'ava or your own stinginess. If you can win that war, that battle, that game, that contest, you're the greatest athlete of all time without ever participating in the Olympics of the Greeks. Remember those buttons. The more you get involved, the more darkness you're creating. The secret of our patriarchs and matriarchs was their connection to Hashem. And that can only be found with light. And so we spent 8 days lighting. It's 8 days where we should run away from Harry Potter. If you didn't see it, don't. There must be 3 or 4 people who didn't see it yet. It's out a week, it's out 4 days. And it rained all weekend all over the East Coast. So I guess that's why they did $90 million in 3 days, whatever they did. But these connections to these things is using your eyes, your ears, your nose to walk into a dark place, a cave. If you stick your head in the world of Torah, in the world of mitzvot, in the world of chesed, and you spend your 24/7 in that area, you'll be much more enlightened than those that are chasing the bells and whistles of this generation. The Western civilization that is the darkness of Greece. That's the job of Hanukkah. To light a candle and see the light.